Please call the case.
Calling case number SCAP 13-765, Sierra Club v. Castle and Cook Homes, Hawaii, Inc. Arguing for the petitioner, Eric A. Sykes. Also appearing for the petitioner, Sarah R. Devine. Arguing for the respondent, Castle and Cook, Benjamin M. Matsubara. Also appearing for the respondent, Castle and Cook, Curtis T. Tabata. Arguing for the respondent, Department of Planning and Permitting, Don S. Kitaoka, Deputy Corporation Counsel. Arguing for the respondent, Office of Planning, Brian Yee.
All right, counsel, are we all ready to proceed this morning? Mr. Seitz, all right. And my understanding, Mr. Seitz, you've reserved 8 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll give you a warning light when you get to that point of your argument. And on the respondent side, Mr. Matsubara, you'll have 15 minutes, Mr. Kitaoka, 5 minutes, and Mr. Yee, 10 minutes. Is that correct? So we'll give you warning lights when you get to that portion of your of the respondent's 30 minutes. Very well. Mr. Seitz, your argument.
Thank you. May it please the court, thank you again for the privilege of being here. Before I start, I want to acknowledge my associate who has done most of the work on this case and also appearing here today. Representing the Sierra Club is Anthony Ayalo, and Senator He is also present.
All right, thank you.
We are at a critical juncture in the battle to protect the environment and to preserve essential resources for our children and for generations to come. If we are at all serious about preserving agricultural lands and increasing food self-sufficiency, we simply cannot allow the very best, the most productive agricultural lands to be paved over and lost forever. The respondents have characterized this case as a conflict between two very important priorities, building housing and advancing agriculture. But there is no inherent conflict. And in fact, at the Land Use Commission, there was very substantial evidence that there are lots of places that houses can be built but that crops cannot grow. There already are, in the areas where this particular project is intended to be placed, thousands and thousands of potential homes that have already been designated and rezoned for the purposes of construction. Currently, we believe there are more than 50,000 such units that could be built in other locations in the same areas where they propose to build this particular project. And yet they choose the best agricultural land. There are few lands currently producing and capable of continuing to produce the kinds of produce which are grown on the lands that are proposed for this particular project. There was lots of evidence at the Land Use Commission that there are other areas that are zoned agriculture, but there was no evidence that those areas that are currently zoned agriculture either have the infrastructure to be able to provide water or the other natural necessities for successful agricultural enterprises. There was no evidence of any history of productive use of those lands for the purposes of agriculture. And there is no evidence that economic viability in agriculture attaches to any of those other lands. The last time that this court looked at a case involving a challenge to rezoning agriculture in 2003 in the Life of the Land case, at that point in time, that particular piece of land had already been tried in agriculture, and in the opinion of the court, there is emphasis that viable agriculture was not working there. Now, that wasn't the basis upon which the court decided the case. At that point, the court decided the case in 2003 on the argument that was amply presented that the legislature had not acted to implement Article 11, Section 3 of the Constitution.
Well, Mr. Seitz, that leads me to the first question I wanted to ask. Is there, in your view, a legal impediment to the Land Use Commission going forward Given the current state of affairs in terms of important agricultural lands being designated? In other words, is there a legal barrier either in the Constitution or in Chapter 205 that precluded them from going forward in these circumstances, as opposed to the question of whether it's good policy or not, or whether the record supported this particular project? Is there a legal impediment given where we are in terms of important agricultural lands being designated?
I believe there is.
And if so, where do we find that?
Well, first of all, you find it in the purposes for which the Land Use Commission was created. The Land Use Commission was created, and its enabling statute and rules and regulations indicate that fundamentally the Land Use Commission is designed to protect agricultural lands from redesignated and used for other purposes. That's the first thing. Secondly, you find the 1978 constitutional amendment, which we acknowledge until 2005, had not been implemented by the legislature. But then you have the act, the Important Agricultural Lands Act, which is very detailed, and in 2005 set standards and established obligations for the counties, as well as for the Land Use Commission, to engage in the process of identifying important agricultural lands. And from 2005 until these cases were heard, the Land Use Commission basically ignored that statute. Are they free to ignore a statute? Are they free to ignore it because the counties themselves ignored it? I don't believe so. I think that there was a mandate by the legislature in response to a decision by this court to implement the Constitution and to protect agricultural lands. And the longer the Land Use Commission delayed and refused to do that, the greater the violation of its own mandate and its own purpose.
Now, is that explicit in either the Constitution or the statute? Is it explicitly said the Land Use Commission shall not redesignate lands from agricultural to urban until the process of designating important agricultural lands is completed or some other milestone?
No, it is not explicit. But I don't believe it needs to be explicit, because as this court has said on other numerous occasions, when we're talking about environmental acts or exemptions to environmental acts or anything having to do with allowing developments to go forward that may have an adverse impact on environmental concerns, that you will hold the state agencies to very rigid requirements to ensure that they make all of the necessary findings and engage in all of the protections, because that's what this environmental legislation was intended to do. And simply ignoring a statute for as many years as they've done, I believe is unconscionable and frankly criminal, given the consequences of paving over this valuable agricultural land. Now, during the course of the proceedings in 2012, before the Land Use Commission, the Honolulu County Council did in fact take up the process. And indeed, by amending a resolution that they passed unanimously, they also included this particular parcel of land to be considered for the purposes of whether or not it was an important agricultural land. We asked the Land Use Commission to just stay the proceedings until that process could be completed, because of the obvious consequences if they were to go forward and destroy this land. The Land Use Commission didn't even want to hear it. We wanted to have witnesses testify about what the council was doing, and the Land Use Commission wasn't interested. The Land Use Commission, basically, if you read through their record and what we've cited to you, had no interest whatsoever in the concerns we raised about protecting what are clearly valuable agricultural lands. And in this case, there is no question that the Coal Ridge property, which is the subject of the petition, meets all of the criteria to be determined to be an important agricultural land.
Isn't the argument of the respondents that this land is designated as urban in at least some of the plans that are relevant, and because of that, it's ineligible to be an important agricultural land? What's your response to that?
That is their argument. And let me say, first of all, that in the Important Agricultural Land Statute, there is a reference to the obligations of the counties, and the counties are not required, when they consider important agricultural lands, they are not required to consider lands that are already designated in some urban plans. But that's only with respect to the actions of the counties. The Land Use Commission, in its directives, and by statute, as far as the introductory purposes of the 2005 Act, the Land Use Commission has a broader obligation. And there is a broader constitutional obligation. And if the counties don't act, there is no question that the Land Use Commission has to act and has now been given the authority to act by the legislature in response to this court's concern that was raised in 2003.
Is there anything in the Act 183 that allows the Land Use Commission to unilaterally designate important agricultural lands? It appears to me that the scheme is one in which private landowners can petition for designation. In addition, each county is required to eventually submit lands to the LUC for designation. But I don't seem to see anything that says the LUC can and must unilaterally on its own designate IALs.
That's correct. But our response to that is that because of the overriding policies and the concerns about preserving these lands, which are of such great importance now, especially now with a heightened consciousness about the fact that we only have less than 10% of our food supplies grown here, that the Land Use Commission has a broader job. And what the Land Use Commission should have done and what we asked them to do was to just simply stay their hand and say to petitioners that until and unless there is some consideration of these properties, which clearly qualify as important agricultural lands, by the authorities to whom that role is designated by statute, that we are not going to allow you to reclassify them and destroy them. And that's what we're arguing. I agree with you, the legislature did not specifically give authority to the Land Use Commission to engage in the process of designated important agricultural lands. However, by setting up such a scheme in such detail, with such detailed criteria, in 2005, I don't see how you can possibly argue credibly that waiting 7 years to do that in this time, in this age, when we are so concerned about environmental challenges, that in any way the Land Use Commission could simply go ahead and allow developers to destroy the agricultural lands that grow crops for people to consume in Hawaii. And that is the crux of our argument. Basically, the Land Use Commission did not make findings which I think are entitled to any credibility, that this land is so seriously needed for housing purposes. They didn't make those findings. We acknowledge that housing is a necessity. But as I said earlier, we also acknowledge that there are other places to build houses which won't destroy agriculture. In this particular case, the developers are going to go ahead and they're going to destroy this land forever. There is no guarantee that the crops that are grown at Coal Ridge now can be grown elsewhere, none whatsoever. Therefore, when we talk about criteria in the administrative regulations and elsewhere, saying that it is incumbent upon the Land Use Commission to make a finding that if they reclassify productive agricultural land, that one, it will have no impact on agriculture in Hawaii, and two, it is absolutely essential to make that reclassification, there is frankly no justification in the record for those findings. There is no basis whatsoever, and there is ample basis in the record to demonstrate that, one, there will be a dramatic impact on agriculture, and two, we don't need the homes to be built at Koa Ridge.
Do you find that? Is that present in the regulation, the applicable regulation, Hawaii Administrative Rules 15-1577 sets forth the test and says will not substantially impair actual or potential agricultural production in the vicinity of the subject property or in the county or the state, or is reasonably necessary for urban growth? So is it the petitioner's position that there's not been enough evidence to establish that this particular land is reasonably necessary for urban growth? Is that
it? Yes. Our argument, our position, and we argued it over and over to the Land Use Commission, is that there is not sufficient evidence to satisfy those criteria.
And does it have to be this particular land, or is it only showing it's required just that there is a need for such a development?
Well, I would argue both, frankly. I would argue when you're looking at a particular piece of land, you have to look at what the impact of that land is overall in the scheme of things in terms of what productive agricultural lands are currently engaged in agriculture. And then you have to look at, as they attempted to do with their evidence to show that there are thousands of other acres that are presently zoned agriculture but are not producing, that we can develop those lands as a substitute for what we're now doing at Coa Ridge. And there's no evidence to support that. It's just hypothetical.
Mr. Seitz, you mentioned that 7 years wasn't unreasonable, but kind of didn't finish it. Unreasonable for what?
Oh, I said I think it is unreasonable. And it's when the legislature passes a statute of such importance, that they should have acted upon it, and they can't ignore it. And I agree with the questions raising, do they have authority specifically to go ahead and do this themselves? I agree that they do not. But they have authority, and I think certainly a moral mandate, that they should not allow development to go forward until that law has been enforced.
Isn't there an argument also that going forward is not in conformance with the state plan, which puts such focus on diversified agriculture?
Absolutely, but you know, that argument is counteracted to some degree by the fact that the state plan also has large sections dedicated to the need for housing, and we recognize that. And by virtue of that, we agree that those are very important considerations and concerns, and we have never opposed housing just for the sake of opposing it. But those needs have to be balanced, and that was precisely what the Land Use Commission was established to do. You know, the Land Use Commission was established in the wake of the plantations closing down. We had plenty of land at that point in time, which nobody knew how it would be used in the next 30 or 40 years. Well, we've developed a lot of that land. And the rest of the land that has not been developed or utilized doesn't have infrastructure which can deliver water any longer, either in amounts or qualities that are necessary for growing crops. And we had a long history in this state of enterprises that were not economically viable in the wake of the closure of the plantations, so that agriculture was very slow to develop, among other reasons, because there weren't markets for locally grown produce. Well, now we have a different situation. Now we have markets for those products. We put into the record evidence that the stores that buy local products can't get enough of it for what's being grown, and that there is huge demand, and that people are willing to pay more for locally grown produce. All of that is a changed situation since these urban plans were developed back in the 1970s, which needs to be reconsidered, which is precisely why the Honolulu County Council was willing to consider Coa Ridge and Ho'opili as possible candidates for important agricultural lands, despite the fact that they are within urban boundaries. And so there is no impediment to that on a statewide basis. There is simply an ignorance and a refusal on the part of decision makers in this state to stand up to developers, to stand up to unions, to make the important decisions to protect the environment. And my hope is that this court will intercede, as you have in other important cases, despite the economic impacts in the short run, and take what I think would be a bold but essential step to protect these agricultural lands.
Do you think the LUC, you said that they have an obligation to balance.
Yes.
Do you feel that they did, in the findings of fact, conclusions of law, that they didn't balance the needs in the
yes,
state plan?
Yes, I do.
In what way?
We asked them to go through the process of first determining whether these lands would be, could be, considered to meet the criteria for important agricultural lands. They thought that was irrelevant. We asked them to consider the mandate of the 11th Amendment to the 11th Section 3 to the Constitution. They said no. We filed a brief on that issue, and they basically said that's not their job. So basically, their job was to simply go ahead and provide lip service to the concerns, as they did with traffic and water and a number of other issues, and then simply rubber stamp the findings of fact that were presented to them by the petitioners. And they really did not give any serious consideration to the concerns we raised. We called the most qualified, most capable experts to testify with respect to the value of these agricultural lands and the consequences that would occur if those lands were not protected. And the Land Use Commission really wasn't interested. And that, I think, is a disaster. That clearly indicates that the Land Use Commission is not doing the job it was mandated to do. It is supposed to police the development of these lands for the interests not only of current residents of Hawaii, but for future generations.
Now their argument or the findings of fact seem to indicate that the current tenants of this land will be relocated elsewhere on lands that, at least reading the findings of fact, appear to be satisfactory to them. Therefore, there is not a loss within the meaning of the rules. What's your answer to that argument, Mr. Seitz?
Well, I have to be very careful about that because I represented the Sue brothers who ran Alun Farms in a criminal case. As I happen to know a little bit, that I have to compartmentalize so I don't violate any attorney-client privilege. But frankly, Alun Farms was a captive of the landowners in this situation. They didn't have much choice. If they didn't agree to relocate when relocation was requested of them, they weren't going to be allowed to farm there. That's the first thing. The second thing is that although they have said they think those lands would be a substitute for what they're currently utilizing, there is, in fact, no track record of production on those lands. And there is no evidence in the record of any sort that the lands to which they are scheduled to be relocated could produce either in the amount or the quality or the number of cycles of crops that they are currently producing at Koa Ridge. So although they support the development in the manner in which it appears in the record, they did not appear to testify, so we were not able to cross-examine them. They basically sent a letter saying that we're happy that we've been allowed to be at Koa Ridge and now we're ready to move on. And that doesn't meet the criteria. That may meet their criteria for their business interests, but it doesn't really address the more fundamental concerns of the people of Hawaii to not only preserve food production, but to expand it so that we can deal with the issue of food self-sufficiency by growing more and more food here rather than putting ourselves at grave risk.
So what would be the showing in the petitioner's view that would had to be made, had to have been made to establish that this development was reasonably necessary for urban growth? It was somehow uniquely suited for that purpose, or what would the test be?
Yes, I think that, frankly, they would have had to show that these lands have some sort of degree of uniqueness for their ability to place houses or whatever the proposed development is on that land, that it has unique proximity to schools and supermarkets and other places where people are going to work, that the need for placing the homes there is far greater than what can be done by placing the homes elsewhere within a 5 to 10 mile distance from where they propose to build this development. And as we've said to you, in Eva, in Kapolei, in a number of other places around there, there are ample homes that have already been permitted on land that's already been zoned for development. And there's no problem about building homes there, except that the developers, for whatever reason, have not gone forward. There's no reason why Castle and Cook can't enter into some sort of a deal to purchase those lands and build this development within a very short distance from where it's proposed, but not on valuable agricultural land. And those kinds of alternatives were never considered by the Land Use Commission. Castle and Cook wants to build at Koa Ridge. They have a plan. They're going to provide houses which are needed in Hawaii, and that was all. That was it. That was all the Land Use Commission required.
Mr. Seitz, what is your response to the evidence that was presented that the reason there isn't more agricultural business in Hawaii is that there aren't people who want to farm the lands?
My answer to that is it's untrue. There are people clamoring to engage in agriculture. They're coming out of universities. They're coming out of the law profession. One of my associates who's sitting in the courtroom is now basically spending much of his time in Waianae growing crops. There are any number of people who now want to grow crops and work in agriculture. The environment has changed.
And Mr. Seitz, isn't agriculture far beyond just growing crops? Doesn't it include things like animal husbandry, fish propagation, solar, biofuel? I mean, it includes a number, flower growing.
It even includes GMO crops, but we won't go there.
But in other words, it's not just growing plants and vegetables.
No, it is.
And in fact, what the legislature wanted was to build a business economy in agriculture. It even includes tourism, taking them to agricultural sites.
And that is what's going on. If you heard, if you review the testimony from Mao Farms and some of the other entrepreneurs in the area who are doing incredibly creative work with the West Oahu campus of UH, on some of the outer islands, we have a whole flowering and development. If you go to the markets on the weekends where they're growing crops, they have many, many more people who want to participate in those markets than they have the space to do so. Agriculture is a big thing now, and the belief that many, many people have in the necessity for growing their own food and growing it locally has simply created an entirely different environment for agriculture to flourish. And Alun Farms is just one. There are many of these enterprises, contrary to the 70s and 80s and 90s, that are economically viable now. And so, in fact, the basis for agriculture to grow and flourish exists, and it needs to be encouraged, not discouraged.
Thank you very much, Mr. Seitz. We'll reserve the rest of your time for rebuttal. And hear now from Mr. Matsubara on behalf of Respondent Castle and Cook.
Thank you. Chief Justice Rechtenwall, Justices Nakayama, McKenna, Balak, Judge Brown. May it please the court. Appellants are asking basically that the decision rendered by the Land Use Commission be vacated because it doesn't comply with Article 11, Section 3 of the State Constitution or Act 183. They're also asking that a moratorium exists until the county completes the IL process. Based on questions asked by Justice McKenna and Chief Justice Rechtenwall, there is no statutory authority that prevents the Land Use Commission from proceeding with the Land Use Commission District Boundary Amendment or gives authority to any party to stop the proceeding. The Land Use Commission is a creature of statutes. The statute that exists requires that they process and promulgate the District Boundary Amendment within a year's time. The IL process is a total separate procedural process. It can be done by a complaint for declaratory relief and be concluded within 90 days. There are separate issues that are focused on in each. In a district boundary amendment, the Land Use Commission is looking at all the various potential uses the property could be put to. And they have four categories they can put the land in: urban, rural, ag, or conservation. So the consideration is looking at all the potential uses that the land has. In an IL proceeding, the focus is on whether or not the land is suited to be designated as important ag land. Now, the legal analysis that's being proposed by the appellants isn't supported by the legal authorities they cite. I think more importantly, the facts that are surrounding the environment within which this decision took place should be examined. And specifically, I'm focusing on agricultural facts. One, such as the availability of land, good ag land, and impact on agriculture, whether or not there is any.
Mr. Matsubara,
yes.
Was that evidence deduced at the hearings that took place in February of 2012 and April of 2012?
The availability?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was. And there are findings of fact that reflect?
Right. Correct.
Yeah.
So my question is that with respect to the evidence produced at the Land Use Commission and the findings, what is this court's role by statute and by law, case law, as to the standard of review? Are we limited to the testimony that was presented at the Land Use Commission and then reviewed by circuit court?
In terms of the facts, clearly erroneous. In terms of the law, it's a de novo review by the faculty. In this particular situation, the question is whether or not the decision that was issued was in violation of controlling constitutional provisions, statutes, or rules or regulations. And I think that's the measurement. And in regard to that particular measurement, the aspect that has to be looked at in regard to examining the requirements the commission must face.
Well, the reason I ask that is because much of Mr. Seitz's argument was about policy issues, policy questions,
yes.
Correct?
Yes.
And so my question to you is, and I'll have to go back and review the record, but I don't recall some of the statements that Mr. Seitz made regarding policy as being part of the record, at least presented to the Land Use Commission and Circuit Court. The question I have for you is how does that play with respect to our view?
In terms of the issue on whether it's administration of the legal statutes that govern the process versus policy, I think initially we're limited to following what the law provides the agency has to do. Policy is policy, and I think for all practical purposes as it relates to administrative agency, unless this court is left with a feeling that based on the evidence adduced, procedures that were incorporated, that it should be vacated. Other than that, I think the law, the facts, the record should govern whether or not it was properly conducted within the statutory framework it should be conducted.
And I
don't know where the policy enters at that point in time.
Well, I'd like to ask you, do the record, and respond to Mr. Seitz's argument that these lands are the record established of extraordinary quality and productivity, and where in the record does it establish that that is not going to be a negative impact that would substantially impair actual or potential agricultural production in the vicinity of the subject property? There's testimony about, or there's evidence about these other lands that have been offered to Alun Farms, but according to Mr. Seitz, there's nothing to indicate that those lands really are of similar quality or productivity.
Those lands were former plantation lands. As far as the area we're concerned on, we're looking at central Oahu. There's an urban growth boundary within which the city has determined urban growth and expansion can occur. Beyond that urban growth line, for central Oahu at least, there are at least 10,300 acres, the North Shore Kunia, that under the Central Oahu Sustainable Community Plans is preserved for agriculture. No urban use, no other use except agriculture. Now, the property that Alun Farms moved to is Dole property. It's also former plantation property. There's a water infrastructure there for him. It's a similar acreage that he had at Coa Ridge. Tanata Reservoir provides the water. He has an option for another 332 acres, so he can double what he has. He's still farming at Coa Ridge. We've waived the rent since 2009.
Does that matter that you've waived the rent? And does it matter that he's still farming? He's not going to be farming if this is approved.
Pardon me?
Well, you just said he's still farming.
Yes.
And you just said you waived the rent. And my question to you is, how does that pertain to whether or not the permit should have been granted in this case?
Well, it's reflective, I guess, of encouraging diversified agriculture, for example. He has to move. He is in the process of moving. He's going to begin farming this year, the new property he has. By waiving rent, it assists him in the costs and expenses of a really difficult industry, which is farming. I think the evidence
does that argument help you that it's a really difficult industry and he's doing very well now and you're moving to another property and your argument is that because it's old plantation land, it's equivalent?
Well, the ratings for those other properties are also good ag land. The agricultural consultant who testified on behalf reflected to the fact that they are good ag lands. There's a lot of good ag lands, and it has water infrastructure, which is important.
But I'm sorry.
Mr. Montabaro, I'd like to return to something that you said, that the LUC is a creature of statute. And clearly, it would seem to me that what's governing here, at least one of the main things, is whether or not 205-4 was satisfied. Would you agree that that's the amendment to district boundaries? There are specific requirements in the statute that amendment must satisfy.
Correct.
Okay. Now that statute, now I looked at what the conclusions of law said. And the conclusions of law, what they cite to is they said that they satisfy 205.2, 205.16, 205.17, 205.82. And that seems to conform with the administrative rule, but the statute actually says something different. The statute, in addition, says it cannot be violative of 205.2 and Part 3 of this chapter. So there's an additional requirement in 205.4, which the Land Use Commission didn't consider, and which you argue in your brief that it has no consideration. Is that's your position, correct?
I'm looking at the decision-making criteria under 205.17, which the commission is required to include and satisfy in terms of making any decision granting a district boundary amendment. And I believe the requirements of 205.17, which include the criteria of Chapter 205, were complied with.
205.4 specifically says it has to not be violative of Part 3 of this chapter. Now, Part 3 of that chapter is the important agricultural lands. And I think the argument has been, well, that section doesn't qualify. But I'd like to read to you 205.41, which does not, it's 205, it's the policy. And it says that it is declared that the people of Hawaii have a substantial interest in the health and sustainability of agriculture as an industry in the state. There is a compelling state interest in conserving the state's agricultural land resource base and assuring the long-term availability of agricultural lands for agricultural use to achieve that purpose. And then it lists conserving and protecting, promoting diversified agriculture, increasing agriculture, and ensuring the availability. It actually goes beyond the constitutional provision. And according to the Land Use Commission, and according to your position, this statute has no effect in reviewing the petition. Is that your position?
I'm sorry.
No, is that the position?
No, I believe the statutory requirements were satisfied. I mean, even though the constitutional provision, Article 11, Section 3, is not controlling, it's reflective of goals in terms of the state shall conserve and protect ag lands, promote diversified agriculture. If you look at what the Land Use Commission considered in regard to what was doing to mitigate the ag impact, such as the IAL process that Castle and Cook undertook to reclassify as important ag lands parcels that exceeded in acreage what was reclassified for Core Ridge.
Can I read to you your position in your brief? It says the petition lands, however, are not designated as IAL and therefore are not subject to any additional scrutiny under Article 11, Section 3, as implemented by Sections 205.41, which is what I just read to you, through 52. And the LUC takes the identical position. However, it is undisputed that these lands were never designated as IAL, and therefore Part 3 of Chapter 205 is inapplicable into this case. And that's 205.41. So according to the LUC, and according to Castle Cook, that section should not be considered, and considered, was not considered.
Considered in regard to whether or not the Core Ridge property, which is the subject of the petition, was IAL land. There's a process and procedure in Act 183 establishes how land becomes identified and ultimately designated as IAL. If that process has been completed, and if the property is IAL, pursuant to that specific process designed to accomplish it, yes. But in this particular proceeding, this is a district boundary amendment relating to the reclassification of land. It wasn't an IAL proceeding, which is totally separate and distinct from a district boundary amendment. And the commingling of the two doesn't necessarily work. It doesn't. It shouldn't. It's two separate proceedings.
Okay.
Well, and in this, the IL designation was not placed on the subject property in that sense. It is good land, no question. But does it have the status of important ag lands as required under 183 and the process that goes with it? No.
When does it know if it's important until it goes through the process? And 205-841 is a general statement of policy. It applies to all agricultural lands, at least on its face, it would appear.
And the policy is then implemented by the process and procedure one needs to go through to achieve that.
So that procedure has started. Is it possible that this would still be designated as an IAL?
No. Under the existing statutes, since this property is designated for future urban use under Central Oahu Sustainable Community Plans and is within that urban growth boundary, it cannot be designated under 205 for anything other than urban development.
Even if the county council, how do you respond to Mr. Seitz's argument that the county council has asked that this parcel be considered?
It's, I guess, a resolution to see whether there's a possibility of doing it. But under the existing statutes now, they cannot. There's also a requirement under the standards and criteria for IAL land that the lands proposed have to be consistent with the county plans. And the county plans designate this for urban growth and expansion. So, you know, you would have to change, I guess, the Central Oahu Sustainable Community Plans to perhaps move the line as to where the urban growth boundary is. But until that's done by statute, you cannot.
Do you think the standards and criteria that you just mentioned apply to the Land Use Commission in this case?
What criteria? Apply?
The standards and criteria for important agricultural lands. Do you think it applied in this case?
If it was an IAL proceeding, that's the standards they would use for purposes of determining whether or not it's IAL land. Specifically, that's the purpose of that process.
Do you know,
if they're doing a district boundary amendment, that's different. They're not looking at designating it as IAL land. In a district boundary amendment, they're looking at whether or not the property should be classified as requested.
Okay, 205A17 says, in its review of any petition for reclassification of district boundaries pursuant to this chapter, the commission shall specifically consider the following. And under section 4, it says, the standards and criteria for the reclassification or rezoning of important agricultural lands in section 205-50. It doesn't actually say if applicable. It says it shall consider the standards and criteria.
205-50 relates to the IAL statutes and proceedings relating to the IAL. And if the property has been designated an IAL...
Mr. Matsubar, if you could speak into the mic, please. We are recording the proceeding so folks can listen to it who aren't able to be here today.
Excuse me. Thank you.
If
the property was IAL, the commission would have to utilize that for purposes of determining. Once it's IAL, there's a huge difference in how one goes about designating that property in something other than ag. And that's why you have a separate process to reach that classification.
But 205A17 doesn't limit it to that. That's your interpretation of the statute, because the statute doesn't say only if it's IAL.
I guess I'm reading the section in totality and recognizing there's two separate procedures, and there's a significance to the designation IAL. And based on the process that's been promulgated, is why I'm arguing the way I am.
Thank you. I do have one quick question. Please respond to Mr. Seitz's arguments that there are no findings in the record why this particular portion of land is reasonably necessary for urban growth, that indeed such a finding, in his view, is required.
It's required under, if it's under intensive ag 2 years prior to, but under this record, we provided testimony to the fact that at least in Central Oahu, in 10 years, there's going to be a shortage of 6,500 units. For Oahu as a whole, the shortage in 2030 is anticipated to be 30,000 units. So for purposes of providing housing, the need is there. In the geographic area designated by the city's long-range Central Oahu Sustainable Communities Plan as to where this urban growth should occur. And so it follows, the expert testimony was designed to follow what the county had earmarked as where urban development would occur. And so this being the only area within that, it's sort of like an infill between Mililani, Pearl City, Waipio, Gentry. Within that infill area, this is what was designated. So testimony was directed to Central Oahu housing, and the only area that's available for that at that time now is Core Region.
You would agree that the broader social policy questions raised by Mr. Seitz are in fact implicit and inherent in the Constitution, correct? Hawaii's Constitution. Specifically, Article 11, I believe, Section 3. You agree with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't object to his arguments with respect to the social policy issues that this court has to consider, correct?
Well, I think there's differences in the sections under Section 11 that place a definition and policy clearer. For example, Article 11, Section 3 relates to ag land, for example, and he talks about the goals to be achieved and the legislature should come up with the proper procedure to do that. Then they also talk, however, about water resources. And in water resources, it's clear the state has control over all water resources for the benefit of the people of Hawaii. So in that sense, if I run through it, I can see whether or not the interpretation and the application of the statute and the provisions are consistent with policy binding. And in many instances, they are. Because if you look at what the Land Use Commission required of this applicant in regard to satisfying the requirements of their rules and regulation, it also ends up satisfying the purpose of Article 11, Section 3, which is ag lands, protect ag lands, which we did by designated IAL. We promoted diversified ag by designating as IAL parcels that are in diversified ag now, and we're assisting a farmer on our property to continue his diversified ag operations. And on the property that we declared as IAL, which is former plantation land, but not in cultivation at the time, it satisfies the last provision in that, ensuring the availability of suitable lands for agriculture. So, you know, in terms of that policy, what was done, I see satisfying. So, you know, in terms of the broader policies, I can understand how the application of statute and the results go hand in hand.
Okay. Very well. Thank you. At this point, we will move on to Mr. Kitaoka. Thank you, Mr. Munsonboro.
Good morning. May it please the court, Don Kitaoka, Deputy Corporation Counsel, on behalf of the Department of Planning and Permitting, City and County of Honolulu.
Morning.
When I was a child, many, many years ago, and when I was inclined to the occasional outburst, my mother used to tell me, you know, she said, now, Don, that's how they used to talk in the 50s. Now, Don, there's a time and place for everything. There is a time and place for everything in the land use process. As this court well knows, that whenever I appeared before this court and representing the city's interest, my interest was to preserve the orderly processing of land use approvals and preserve the orderly permitting processes of the city. So there is a time and place for everything. There's a process for designation of IAL, and the city is going through that process as we speak. The city has been mapping IAL lands and going through public meetings to vet this mapping. There is a process for LUC reclassifications of land, and there is a process in the city that is very important to the city, which is the development of the city's general plan and the city's regional development plans and sustainable communities plans. So it is true that Article 11, Section 3 of the state constitution mandates a policy to preserve and protect agricultural lands. And it's also clear that that policy is not self-executing. That policy is to be implemented pursuant to Act 183, the process that the county is going through as we speak.
In terms of part of that Act 183, 20547, the portion that says that when the county does designate important agricultural lands, it's not to include lands that have been, as a part of the county plan, been designated as urban land. And I understand that this land is actually a part of the urban fringe according to the Central Oahu's Sustainable Communities Plan. So my question in terms of process is, what would be the process for amending the Central Oahu Sustainable Communities Plan to change this from, if someone was so inclined to do so, what would be that process to change this from urban to agriculture?
That process is a very involved and extended process, which goes through public meetings. It goes through the Planning Commission.
Who initiates such a process?
Actually, there is supposed to be a periodic reviews every 10 years. And that periodic review for the Central Wild Sustainable Communities Plan is undergoing as we speak also. There are public review drafts of that plan that are being vetted as we speak. So the last Central Wild Sustainable Communities Plan that is in effect is 2002's plan. And I'd like to point out that 2002 plan shows Core Ridge as being within the urban community boundary, and also that Waiava is within the urban community boundary, and that the urban community boundary was in fact to protect urbanization of 10,350 acres of prime and unique agricultural lands, at the same time to provide adequate land for residential, commercial, and industrial uses. So it wasn't just somebody with a magic marker marking an urban community boundary. It was a boundary that was vetted through the public process and public meetings and through the Planning Commission and City Council. So to amend that plan would go through the same process.
But so is there anything in the record to indicate what this latest review, is there anything in the record as to what the latest review, whether this is still included? Is there anything in the record?
I'm probably the only person at the table that wasn't at the Land Use Commission hearings. But if it was in the record, it would have shown that Core Ridge is definitely within the urban community boundary and slated for development as anticipated by both the 2002 community plan and the public review draft today.
Is there a process by which a non-landowner can petition for IAL designation?
A non-landowner?
Yes.
No, there isn't. There's only a voluntary process for IAL, and then there's a county process. And, of course, there's a state process for state land, but the county process is being vetted as we speak. And so non-landowners can participate, as public members can, in the process that the county is going through now in mapping important agricultural lands.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kitioka. Now we'll hear from Mr. Yi on behalf of the State Office of Planning.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Brian Yi. I'm the Deputy Attorney General on behalf of the Office of Planning. To note, the Deputy Attorney General Diane Erickson, on behalf of the Land Use Commission, is present here today, but will not be speaking, and she has very graciously allowed me some of her time. I would like to first address a few of the questions that were asked, just to add to the record. It had been asked whether the appellants were limited to the facts in the record,
And I think the answer is that in Chapter 91 appeals, you are limited to the facts on the record. You are not allowed to, because you have to review what the original decision maker made, and their opportunity to make their case was before the Land Use Commission originally. They cannot then come to the appellate court and say, oh, here's something that they didn't look at, and so I want you to overturn their decision. Now, if they had an independent cause of action that exists outside the Chapter 91 appeal, I believe they would then have been allowed at circuit court to supplement the record. They did not do so in this case, and I believe this is a Chapter 91 appeal. You would also ask whether it made any difference as to whether Alloon Farms was allowed to stay for rent-free. For the Office of Planning, it was an important fact because we did know that when you transfer to a new area of land, there is always a transition period where you need to prepare the land and get it ready, as every farmer needs to understand that particular parcel of land and what will work best for them. So the fact that Alloon Farms was allowed to stay in the existing area during this transition period was an important economic issue for us as to the continued sustainability of Alloon Farms. So it was a very gracious offer that the Office of Planning appreciated.
So your support for whether or not a permit would be granted to Gill?
It was not based upon that offer. It was simply, you would ask whether it was relevant at all. And I was just saying it's relevant. It certainly was not the primary basis by which the Office of Planning supports the Land Use Commission decision in this case. You had also mentioned an issue about standards and criteria established in Part 3 of Chapter 205. And just so that we're all clear, 205-44 sets forth the standards and criteria for determining whether or not land should be identified as IAL. And appellant has argued that it meets that criteria. Mr. Matsubara has pointed out that it hasn't come through the process, and it didn't meet the other criteria that it be within the the land not be within an area designated by city or state plans for development. But 205-44 sets forth the criteria for determining whether or not land should be identified as IAL. It is not the criteria for determining whether or not land should be reclassified. It's only if the lands is reclassified, only if the lands are designated as IAL, that the standards and criteria for reclassification change.
Mr. Meany, my question was actually a little different.
Okay.
You agree that 205.17 has to be complied with.
Yes.
Well, 205.17 specifically requires, it says shall, that the commission shall specifically consider the following, the standards and criteria for the reclassification and rezoning of important agricultural lands in Section 205.50. That's what it says.
Right, and I just want to be clear that 205-44 is different than 205-50. So if lands are identified as IAL, then 205-50 applies, and the Land Use Commission must consider the standards and criteria in 205-50. If they have not been identified as IAL, then in order to identify them, you look at 205-44, but for purposes of reclassification, it's 205-17. And the standards criteria under 205-50 are inapplicable.
So in other words, you're saying that specific section which requires the Land Use Commission to look at that is inapplicable even though it says it is?
In this case, it is inapplicable. And maybe if someone came to the Land Use Commission with IL lands and they're asking that it be reclassified, then that would trigger that clause. And then the provisions of 205-50 or the standards and criteria in 205-50 would then apply, and the LUC would need to apply those provisions.
What's your answer to Mr. Seitz's point that this process has taken quite a long time to designate important agricultural lands, and that this court, at some point, there needs to be effect given to that mandate set forth by the legislature back in 2005, and have we reached that point?
We have not, and I say we have not because the legislature determined in the original Act 183 that the counties were given 60 months in which to do this, 60 months from the time of funding. So and the city and county of Honolulu has never been funded for the IAL project.
Funded by who?
Funded by the state. So if it's 60 months after the state has funded the city's efforts for IAL, that they were required to.
And the state has never funded?
The state has never funded the city and county of Honolulu.
Is that in the record?
the lack of funding, I'm sorry, I don't remember if that's...
We couldn't find anything in the record to show whether or not it had been funded. So is the lack of funding in the record?
It would not be in the record. I suppose it would be in the existing government records for budgeting. I can tell you that they've not been funded.
So it's not in the record, and we can't consider anything outside the record at this time.
Except to the extent you could take judicial notice of the of government records for budgeting. But that would be such a, I acknowledge that would be a very difficult factual research.
I don't.
I also wanted to note that although it has taken some time, I think, for the counties to do this, even though it's within the provision of time allowed for under the statute, I will note that the constitutional provision was passed in 1978, and the legislative provision was not done until 2005. So the delay has not been primarily, frankly, at the county level, at least not if you look at the entire history of Article 11, Section 3.
Mr. Yeh, I'm going to, the red light is on, but I think that's because we ran a little longer with the earlier attorney, so I'm going to give you a little more time, and then I'm also give Mr. Seitz more time if he needs it. So you have a couple more minutes to cover the of your allotted time.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Let me just note that I think we've covered the provisions of responding to particular arguments by the appellants in our brief. What I wanted to at least note for a minute or so is the fact that there is a larger comprehensive land use scheme in which these provisions exist. Namely, there is 205-16, 205-17, and the Central Oahu Sustainable Communities Plan. In each of these provisions, it requires the Land Use Commission or the city, in the case of the Sustainable Communities Plan, to balance the various interests for land use. So in 205-16, it requires the Land Use Commission to determine that the reclassification conforms to the Hawaii State Plan, and appellants have not challenged that determination. So in the balance drawn under the Hawaii State Plan, the Land Use Commission's decision is not challenged. In 205-17, there is similarly a list of factors for consideration, which includes agriculture. And so there is a provision, and again, the appellants have not challenged the finding of the Land Use Commission that it met 205-17's criteria. They instead have argued that there are other provisions which should apply, and they argue that those other provisions, Article 11, Section 3, Part 3 of 205, and HAR 1515-77. But they didn't challenge 205-17 and the balance drawn by the Land Use Commission in this case. And in those conditions, or under those considerations, agriculture was a factor. So when you look at the other provisions that the appellants are arguing about, you have to understand that they are specific requirements for a specific interest, but it exists within a larger land use scheme in which a balance is to be struck. And so that when you look solely at agriculture, it does not need to be an expansive interpretation of what the requirements are. In fact, if you look at the purpose of Chapter 205, I will acknowledge that appellants are correct to say part of the purpose was to preserve and protect. But if you turn to Act 187 in the 1961 session laws, it talks about the purpose as being to preserve, protect, and encourage the development of the lands in the state for those uses to which they're best suited for the public welfare. So the very purpose of Chapter 205 is not solely related to preserving and protecting, but also to encourage those lands for development which should be developed. The Land Use Commission is composed of 9 volunteer members who devote a substantial amount of their time to do this, to use their best judgment, to draw their balancing under the statutory criteria. We hope that you will not disturb that decision and uphold the Land Use Commission decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yeh. Mr. Seitz, your rebuttal. And how much time does Mr. Seitz have remaining? Mr. Seitz, if you need some more time beyond that, since I gave the respondents extra time, I will give you some as well.
I'm not sure that I do. Judge Browning, I would encourage you to look at the proposed findings of fact that we submitted to the Land Use Commission, which was filed on May 2nd, 2012, because I think it does cite you to the record with respect to the arguments we made, much of which was based upon cross-examination of the witnesses called by the developer in support of their petition. Russell Kokoban, who was the governor's chief of agriculture at that time, and a man by the name Bruce Plath, who was their expert. And I submit to you that everything we've argued is based essentially upon the record that we created largely through the cross-examination of those two witnesses. I would also encourage you to look, if you haven't done so, at the testimony that was offered to the Land Use Commission both orally and in writing by Hector Valenzuela. Hector Valenzuela is one of the foremost agricultural experts in the state of Hawaii, and his testimony, I think, was overwhelming.
Mr. Seitz, however, as I recall, based on the record, at the circuit court, you conceded that the LUC had the authority to judge the credibility of the witnesses, and you were not challenging the LUC's determination of credibility. And in fact, you actually did not challenge any specific findings in front of the circuit court.
That's correct. Of course, the Land Use Commission is the judge of credibility. They're the triers in this case. But we believe that they were not entitled to ignore all of the testimony overwhelmingly, and it was an abuse of their discretion to do so. There was no contrary testimony with respect to the agricultural lands that are cited repeatedly over and over again as being an adequate substitute for the agricultural uses to which the subject petition lands are being used. There was no testimony to that effect. And there was no impeachment of Mr. Valenzuela. So if they rejected that testimony, yes, theoretically, they're entitled to do so. But I think it was outrageous for them to do so in this circumstance. Now, again, there was some discussion in some of the questions that were raised by the court to opposing counsel about the whether or not the county can, in fact, consider these lands as part of its inquiry to map important agricultural lands. And if you look at the statute, which is 205-47, Section A, that mandates the county to engage in the process of identifying important agricultural lands. And it says they shall do certain things. But it simply says that they don't have to consider lands that are within an urban plan. It doesn't bar them from doing so. It just simply says they don't have to. Now, I've also pointed out to you there was correspondence, which is in the record, before the Land Use Commission in March of 2012, because it was at that point in time, while these proceedings were going on before the Land Use Commission, that the County Council unanimously asked the city administration to expedite the process and unanimously asked them to consider Koa Ridge for reconsideration. And that was at a time, as it has been brought out, that the urban plans are all being reevaluated in light of what has happened in land development and planning in the last 30 or 40 years. So there's nothing that prevents the city from reconsidering that designation. There is only a statutory indication that says they're not required to. And I think that's a very important distinction.
So you read 205-47 where it says the county shall identify and map potential IALs except lands that have been designated through county planning process for urban use. Except means it's not accepted.
No, it means that they don't have to, but it doesn't prevent them from doing that. Nothing in this statute prevents the county from looking and relooking at whether or not lands of important agricultural production shall be reevaluated. And indeed, as I said, that's exactly what the County Council in a resolution mandated the city administration to do, and that's all in the record. They passed a resolution asking that the process be expedited in 2012, then they amended the resolution to instruct the city and county to include in its work consideration of Koa Ridge. There can be nothing more specific than that. The county clearly thought they had the authority to look at this issue, but as far as I know, it has not yet been completed, and council indicated that to you. Now, also, the last speaker indicated to you, well, gee, you shouldn't be concerned about delays here because there was a delay from 1978 until 2005. Yes, that's true. There was a lot of struggling in agriculture, as I pointed out, where people tried to develop farms and viable agricultural operations on former plantation lands, and it wasn't largely very successful. But then you had this case that was decided in 2003 by the Supreme Court when there was an effort to enforce the Constitution. The Supreme Court said it's not self-executing, and so the legislature, as they said in this act, specifically in section 205-41, subsection 4, that we are here seeking to implement the provisions of Article 11, section 3. So, yes, the legislature went back and did that at the urging of this court. And then, in all the time that's passed since then, the legislature's mandate has simply been ignored. I just simply want to conclude by saying, in our exhibits at the Land Use Commission, we provided some photographs of these lands. And I know many of you are familiar with the land. Some of you drive by them every day. These are gorgeous agricultural lands. And it would be a human tragedy, for them to be developed at this point in time and not preserved for the generations that will follow us. Thank you.
Thank you very much to all of our attorneys here today. The court will take this matter under advisement.